And now we go to broadcast number 639. It's March the 5th, 1984. Tom Davis up at Research, he supplies books and articles for researchers and people interested in history, asked me for a list of my favorite broadcasts that I put on the air that he could put with his book list and maybe single out a few that are my favorite for people to start listening or getting tapes to these broadcasts. And I explained to him that I think it's very important that people just begin with whatever week they get interested in, Mae Bressel or World Watchers. I really don't have any favorites. It's absolutely impossible to say that I think this broadcast is more important than that. It's just like having children and a family. I have no favorites of any of my family, absolutely not. And I don't have any favorites of broadcasts. And when I begin the program each week, I take from my file what we were talking about a year ago tonight. You know how the program begins to show how quickly the year has passed by. And each week I look at it and say, oh, wow, this is the most important broadcast. This is very important material that I'm sharing with you. This has to be great. I even forget almost a year later the form that the news took until I put it in front of me and the basis upon which I select subjects for these broadcasts that are numbered and become part of tape collections is that I take the current news stories that are in the current news this week and show the names and people that are involved particularly in past political assassinations that are linked to John Kennedy's murder, or Robert Kennedy, or Martin Luther King, or the people or the machinery behind the murders, or people who are going to be important in the future on the basis of their strategic position now and how they are linked to government crimes that should be prosecuted that they are getting away with. That's why the broadcasts are so important and never really do have a conclusion because nobody yet is taking these people to task. But someday history may be less kind to them than, say, the impeachment committee was to Richard Nixon when they let him off, or to Ronald Reagan for all the stuff he's pulling. Someday history will be less kind to these people, I am sure. There isn't much you can say about them that's nice, and they're getting away with too much, and part of that is all of our responsibilities. Now, a year ago this evening, or a year ago tomorrow night, broadcast number 587, I was talking about the following subjects, and then we can show how just this week they are pertinent. Just as last week I was, or the week before, giving the names of people in the new book about the banks and the Vatican, and showing that just 1 year ago that evening there were about 8 or 10 names on that broadcast 1 year ago. I had part two of Charles Bluedorn of Gulf and Western and his relationship to Michael Sindona of the Vatican and Madison Square Garden and Ronald Reagan with the I.G. Farben connections and J. Peter Grace, General Electric, Errol Flynn, and the Nazis. The politics of the athletic arena, the motion picture studios, the recording industry, the Vatican, the Mafia, and even reaching off to foreign countries and controlling them as Gulf and Western does and did in the Dominican Republic. I talked about the foreign policy for Australia, how Robert Hawke, the new prime minister, came in and won against Malcolm Fraser, and the Pope in Panama with Monsignor Marcos McGrath and the relationship of McGrath to Juan Perón. We talked about the Pope admitting that he did work at Solvay for I.G. Farben, which was at Auschwitz. He didn't say the word Auschwitz, but he finally admitted that he had worked at the rock quarry and broke rocks for I.G. Farben. Jerry Hodges, I mentioned last 2 weeks ago, the fact that Gabriel Weber was kept out of the United States and that we should write to the German embassy, the U.S. American embassy in Germany. A year ago this week, I referred to Jerry Hodges, who was harassing Gabrielle, and who was harassing me, and he was allegedly interested in Jonestown, and she was publishing Jonestown material, and 1 year later, her papers were removed that she could not come back to the United States. I talked about John Belushi's death, that the DA was going to expect criminal charges. That hasn't happened yet. That the military terminal in New Jersey is run and leased by the mobsters. Nothing has been done about that yet, although there have been some stories about Peter Rodino. As part of the mafia connection, he runs the part of the House of Representatives that's supposed to investigate Nazi war criminals that came to the United States illegally, and there were articles just recently of his links to the mafia, as well as the associates of Edwin Meese III. Last year, just at this time, we talked about the Superfund that was supposed to be used to clean up the Stringfellow acid pits. And I'll get more back to that in a few moments. It involved Edwin Meese III, who was vice president of Rohr Industries, R-O-H-R. His company used the dump. Dart Industries, that's Justin Dart, who passed away this last year, used that dump. The chemical spills and Attorney General William French Smith, a large shareholder in Northrop and General Electric that used the dump, and the relationship of John Lehman to Northrop Corporation. I've done broadcasts on that. Rita Lavelle was left with the sentence for covering up the abuse of holding back funds so that people could get cancer from these pollutants. She isn't in jail yet. She's just on the outside. But a year ago, Edwin Meese's name came up. That's why I was calling Washington, D.C. today to see if they were going to bring up the relationship of Edwin Meese to the politics of cancer and pollution as the Attorney General holding up money that should be cleaned up so that Jerry Brown wouldn't become governor, because it would look like he had a successful cleanup started or had inroads with the federal government, heavens forbid, and so that Pete Wilson was the favorite of these people, the Pete Wilson that just went down to Honduras and Central America is all for the death squads that we're funding. See, it makes a difference who is elected in terms of Senate, like Jerry Brown or Pete Wilson. But the purpose of Edwin Meese, our future Attorney General, holding this back was to make sure that the Senate was stacked with his particular Pete Wilson from San Diego. And of course, San Diego is where he got those questionable loans for his property. We'll do more on that later. I also asked the question, answered the question I was asked, why do you ignore the balcony above John Hinckley Jr.? Why don't I discuss the picture of him that was published? Another man, second gunman, on the balcony in front of the Hilton Hotel when Reagan was shot. And I answered that I had done endless broadcasts of the relationship of the conspiratorial parts of the Hinckley story, of their world vision, of their CIA connections, the connections of the family to George Bush, the vice president, and links with the CIA and with Edward Bennett Williams, the attorney for the CIA. And beyond the fact that there was another gunman up in the balcony who can be seen, or a possible gunman more consistent with the way the bullets went into Ronald Reagan, this was covered up continuously and will be. And when I'm sure when George Bush is president, you won't get anything more out of that. A year ago this evening, the New York Daily News had a story, and also Newsweek, a party with Henry Kissinger on the left and Edward Bennett Williams on the right and Nancy Reagan in the middle. And 1 year later, Kissinger is getting appointments, which were inevitable. This was just in February last year, partying with John Hinckley Jr.'s attorney and Nancy Reagan. And I also talked about the mystery about the Japanese billionaire. Ryoichi Sasakawa is his name, R-Y-O-I-C-H-I-S-A-S-A-K-A-W-A. Ryoichi Sasakawa. There was an article in the San Francisco Examiner a year ago, allegations that Japanese mafia funded Reverend Moon, and that $12 million was given to him and another $32 million to the UN. That Mr. Sasakawa admired Mussolini. He was a violent anti-communist, but he was a well-known fascist. And I also talked about the Vatican link to Opus Dei through the Rumasa Bank in Spain and the large industrial combine, the scandal of working with Opus Dei. That's a lot of time and news in 1 hour. But this week, just to update what's happened this week in terms of that kind of news. Michael Sindona, I referred to it, an item that the primary witness to his murder trial for his indictment was killed in the Correctional Center, Metropolitan Correctional Center in New York City. David Emery sent me a small article from the New York Times. It didn't come in my edition out here. Sometimes they're printed differently. This was William Arrico, a primary witness to a murder charge indictment that Sindona would go to Europe with Arrico and be charged with ordering the murder of the investigator of Sindona's banks. Now, a year ago, I said about Michael Sindona and Gulf and Western and Charles Bluedorn. And, of course, a year later, Sindona's name is in the news because Arrico was supposedly escaping from the ninth floor of a jail and jumped to another roof as if that would help him. I also mentioned Arrico last week as being important, and the date that he was arrested, he was indicted in December of 83 on the murder charges with Michael Sindona, the banker for the Vatican. But the day that he was arrested in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, was June the 18th, the very same day that Roberta Calvi's body, dead body, was found in London, and the very same day that Vicki Morgan filed suit against Alfred Bloomingdale. That was the day that her money was cut off. Her payments from Alfred Bloomingdale were cut off. Now, Bloomingdale worked with the Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, and she had contacts with Robert Vesco and the Mafia, as he did, and with Bernie Kornfield. So the very week that Edwin Wilson was arrested, June 16th in Switzerland, I've mentioned that many times, the week that the money was cut off for Vicki Morgan, which is important in the news today, and the week that Roberta Calvi, the banker, president of Italian Banco Ambrosiano, was found outside of right London, hanging under a bridge, the Blackfriars Bridge, was the day that they brought in Arrico, who had worked with Sindona, and I guess they decided he shouldn't be out on the streets, and with the indictment pending, he was murdered. Now, I talked about the importance of Gulf and Western and Sindona and Nixon and the Vatican, and I mentioned last week or the week before the book In Banks We Trust by Penny Lerneux on the Vatican, the CIA, our politicians in America, the Mafia, and the dictators. There's another book out that I will read and share with you, a book reviews on it already, called O Vatican, A Slightly Wicked View of the Holy See, S-E-E, by Paul Hoffman. It just came out. He's a writer who's done stories on the Vatican for the New York Times, and he goes into the seedy possible murders of popes and details some, including the mystery of John Paul I and the politics of the Vatican, the secret politics, and into the Curia and the Opus Dei. And so this is, I have one book, In Banks We Trust. Now I have to get O Vatican and keep up with all of that information. Now, a year ago, I also was talking about the death squads in El Salvador on that program and how Reagan had funded and increased the funding of the death squads. It didn't bother him that so many were dying. He decided to escalate his money for down in El Salvador, and that was just a year ago this evening. In the past year, he has escalated the funds for El Salvador, and he has put Harry Schlotterman, who I talked about, as advisor to Central America, who worked with the death squads and was part of the murder of Allende and Letelier and covering up the Chilean murders, and has worked with these goon squads right down the line of every island in Central America, or every area, not island. And also, there was another story about Schlotterman in People's World, the return of Harry Schlotterman. It's interesting, of all my publications, that they're the only newspaper that printed the story of his role, the United States' role in the overthrow of Allende and in the Letelier case and in the CIA and in the Dominican Republic. He was very important in the Dominican Republic, and, of course, that involved Mr. Bluedorn and Gulf and Western and Richard Nixon and millions of dollars of profit from that. I mentioned the Japanese corruption, the Japanese mafia, and just this week there was a story in the Wall Street Journal. The Sumitomo Bank said it agreed to acquire 52% that's over the 50% of the Banco Ambrosiano based in Switzerland. And the Wall Street Journal said this is the first time there's been a Japanese takeover of the European banks. Now think of the Trilateral Commission of Japan, Germany, and the United States. The Vatican is out, as we've talked about many times. Their millions of dollars, many millions of dollars, with their dummy front, the $1.3 billion, hundreds of millions. They have not said where the money from the dummy front went. But now, for the very first time, the Swiss Banking Commission cleared the way for a Japanese bank to purchase the Banco Ambrosiano branch in Switzerland, so the Vatican can pay back 88 banks to recover $450 million in loan. So now the Vatican is beholden to the Japanese mafia, which gets interesting because narcotics are narcotics, whether they come out of Southeast Asia or Milan or Turkey, wherever, and the role of Italy with Palermo and the various cities in Milan of narcotics with this holy institution is so tangled. But I think this is quite interesting at this point, because last year I was talking about the Vatican banks and also and the Pope, John Paul II, and also the mystery of the Japanese billionaire, Mr. Sasakawa. Now, in this past year and just recently, a friend from New York, a World Watcher, sent me a long article published in the fall. It was October 4th, 83, on Mr. Sasakawa. The reason I haven't had it on the air is I wanted to outline it very carefully and then share the information with you. It's from The Village Voice by Alec Dubrow and David Kaplan, if you can get it from your library, October the 10th, 1983. And this is called Softcore Fascism, and it has to do with Mr. Sasakawa and his role with the Germans and the Italians and the huge amount of money he gives as a patron to various organizations. And he's being sanitized by honors by Carl Sagan of the space group, who pushes the studying of NASA and various projects of NASA, and Dr. Linus Pauling from Stanford. And Mr. Sasakawa is disseminating, he's passing on a lot of money for respectability, but there's a long article about him, and I'll do more about the Japanese mafia, and it's very important. See, he funds Reverend Moon millions of dollars, and Moon has a wedding in Madison Square Garden of 5,000 people, and I understand that a good hunk of those people are families of Japanese mafia. So he marries Americans or do members of the Japanese mafia, and then once they're in this country, they can bring their parents to this country and visit them, in quotes, visit. The couples don't have to have sex. In fact, he tells them when they can, and some separate and never do. It's sort of like Yentl, where the sex is stayed away from so that the young girl can really marry the one she loves someday. The excuse, you know, covering up the story of why one woman can't marry another woman. But the idea was, we'll keep you pure for the right person. Well, the story of these marriages is just a political thing where we crack down on the immigration of poor people from El Salvador and Central America who can be murdered when they're sent back and deported. And we run a conveyor belt, a line around the airport down Los Angeles, and send them back to their instant death. But we can bring over the Japanese mafia and the fascists, and now they can bail out the Vatican. So they're recycling with each other and bailing each other out. So the Vatican has to be in debt to the Japanese for buying the Banco Ambrosiano in Switzerland that will pay their debts in Panama, where they won't tell who got the money. If that doesn't outrage you, any of these stories are enough to really make you, or should make you, angry. And the circle of connections with these people bailing each other just continuously sets a new precedent. This is the first time that Japan has gone in and bought the controlling stock of a bank in Switzerland. Now, last year I was talking about the Hinckley family and their links to the conspiracy to shoot Ronald Reagan to get rid of him. That would have made George Bush and the vicar, Alexander Haig, in charge of policy in Washington. This year, the Hinckleys are parading. Their pictures were in every major newspaper that I have, a full half page. Hinckley's parents crusade for understanding. They said it's sheer ignorance of mental illness that led to the assassination attempt. Now, here was a fellow who was parading with the Nazi Party in Ohio, with the right wing in Posse Comitatus in California and Colorado, who was training in shooting guns and got away at airports and wasn't arrested by having weapons and ammunition with him. And if they take the weapons, they could pick it up. This is John Hinckley Jr. He lived on a street with, I believe, with Mr. Clements, the former governor of Texas. He lived on a street nearby H.L. Hunt and the far right wingers. He lived in Dallas when John Kennedy's head was blown off, and I'm sure the family was all laughing and celebrating. He collected memorabilia in the house about the murder of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King. He had rifle practice and weapons. He had a CIA attorney, Edward Bennett Williams, who represented Robert Vesco and John Connolly from Texas, and Richard Helms and everyone from the CIA and the organized crime that you can mention. And now they want to go around holding hands, which is so nauseating, these people pretending, you know, that these are young lovers and that their kid just lost a rocker somewhere. They have been political all their life. They were political with World Vision, with their plans to move to Guatemala and interfere with water processes or spying down there. You notice when this assassination attempt didn't go through, they didn't move down to Guatemala. Now they're trying to tell you that the public just isn't aware that that John Hinckley Jr. was a schizophrenic, and that they weren't aware that his parents realized that they made a mistake, that he wasn't lazy, he was insane. He wasn't doing anything insane when he learned Mein Kampf at the schools in Texas. He wasn't doing anything insane when he went to the meetings of the Nazi Party or the Posse Comitatus. The only insane thing he did was not having the right kind of bullets. And I understand, this is one of those not secret sources, but something that I was told, and I will be able to put the person who gave me the information on the air one of these days. I don't keep things from you. John Hinckley Jr. was surprised when the gun went off that the fatal bullets weren't in his gun. They were switched. That he was supposed to have a gun with the dum-dum bullets, and also there was this backup on the balcony that can be seen in shots that came from behind that ricocheted and then went in from different directions into Ronald Reagan. John Hinckley Jr. was quickly taken to a mental institution where the discussion came up as soon as he was arrested about the wrong kind of bullets. So this is a case that I brought up last year, and this year the parents are parading, and there will be more. These stories of the Japanese mafia and the Hinckley attempt on Ronald Reagan or the Nugent Hand or John Paul's fascism or keeping Gabrielle Weber from the United States because of her Jonestown stories, there will be a lot more, and a lot more will come out through the years, because even, as I say, just one broadcast last week and we can do an entire evening of what has happened in the years since. So that's why I don't have favorite programs. You can't give them titles. They just have dates. I used to put a subject category on the top of the broadcast if people want to know what was the last. I say just take a broadcast, any one of them, and you'll have enough information for a long time if you want to listen to it and study it. Now, there's something very important in the news today that was confirmed that I briefly touched about when I was talking about the winners or losers a few weeks ago. The Justice Department is spending, in case, and I'm sure many of you read it, $798,531 to determine whether Playboy, Hustler, or Penthouse, the sexual magazines that also carry news, how they affect the youth. I read this a while back and mentioned to you on the air. Is there a link to violence by juveniles, not by the pornographic magazines? They're not going to study just plain porn. They're going to study the porn and the news that carry the news that you can buy over the stand. Now, the person to head this two-year study, this is going to be 2 years, so we have 2 years to counteract in a way, is none other than Alfred S. Regnery, R-E-G-N-E-R-Y, the controversial appointee that Reagan had to the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention. And Judith Reisman, a researcher, was hired by the American University. I don't know what city that is. We'll find it. To see the importance of literature and data from sexually explicit material in Playboy, Penthouse, and Hustler to understand what it does for youth. And they want, this is the news magazines. As I say, the study will not only look at material in sexually explicit magazines, but they want the ones that carries the news, how does pornography work? And they want a committee to research and come up with conclusions to be used. Now, this is the scary part. It's to be used by police agencies, okay? So you're linking the reading of these magazines to police agencies who are to use the reports. The cost, when it was written up, was said to be over $700,000. And several people complained that this could be done in 2 years for $20,000 to $40,000. Now, why would they spend this kind of money, $700,000 or more, on a two-year study instead of a $60,000? Because with a Cadillac, Reagan expects to go farther. He's got Mr. Regnery, Alfred Regnery, and he wants his full mileage, nothing stopped, so that you know that he will get what he wanted because he paid for it. It's like sending Henry Kissinger to Central America. You don't expect him to come back with a story of poverty and unemployment as the cause for violence down in Central America. You expect him to say, we need $8 billion to slam down those poor native population. Incidentally, Mr. Lee Iacocca, who's no liberal in any sense of the word, with Ford Motor Company and with Chrysler, came out this week and said Ronald Reagan is spending $8 billion in Central America. He should use that money to form a bank to stop our banks that are going bankrupt and have some nucleus of cash in the United States. He is complaining on the waste of money that could be better used than to send down to Central America. We don't have cash, and I believe that Henry Kissinger and Fritz Kramer and their gang are draining us of our economic assets and throwing it away and making us hated besides. Now, what can you do about this story? First of all, I think that Mr. Hugh Hefner and Playboy deserve all of this. They remember how they hired Mordecai Richler to come to me and also to Sherman Skolnick in Chicago to write a outrageous, insulting article about us when we were trying to explain what fascism is. He thought it was so funny. Well, you know, karma comes back to these people in every sense of the word. You cannot do a split loyalty of your beliefs. And if you don't believe in anything and you think you're free to publish, then go ahead and publish. But Hugh Hefner certainly deserves the investigation. Now, I never knew Larry Flynt until September of this year when he was interested in the Larry McDonald story. But I remember when the L.A. Free Press came out with Mark Lane and Dick Gregory and Paul Krasner. And Mae Brussels couldn't get near the place to offer her information about fascism. That's when he got out the Free Press issue and was shot in Georgia a month later. And Dick Gregory and Mark Lane kept from him the information about Robert Byron Watson and the real people behind killing John Kennedy and what was Larry McDonald's Murder Incorporated down in Georgia that then became part of Western goals with our military and international connections in the LAPD. If these magazines were smart, they would get together. There's three solutions to this problem, and there's 2 years to do it. Number one, Hustler, Penthouse, and Playboy would bury their differences, just like the various churches bury their differences, and gather together to try to get prayer in the church or to get abortion stopped. They would get their differences separated, and each would put up a certain amount of money to fund a joint study on the effect of war and drugs and broken homes and television and movies and bad food and diet on violence to children. They could give me the money and I'll spend 2 years and come up with a report equal to Mr. Regnery's. The violence that comes from these children comes from what they see in these homes. The fact that these magazines are in their homes, a lot of it is they're brought in by parents who are drunk, who are doped, who are beating the kids, beating the parents, and are taking care of a child or children when the mother has left them. There are assaults, abuses. Look at the statistics of violence, of the economics of drugs, the TV guide. The idea that the President of the United States would come out against these things is a purely political act and nothing more. And you have to fight it. It is the enemy that doesn't want the real stories coming out about news, and they take this way to prove the magazines are bad for you.